All right. Senator Dick Durbin has just stepped up to our position here, the WGN studios at the Democratic National Convention. Senator,
Senator,
thank you so
Durbin.
Much for being here.
It's an intimate little studio you have here.
It's very nice. Much.
Yeah.
We and,
close quarters.
And 30 other of our very dear friends in radio, brothers and sisters in sound.
You're off, kind of off the, no, you're in the middle of the beaten path.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it something? I mean, this is really, the DNC does this very interestingly. They've always put us in the concourses so that people are coming by and we're part of the energy of the, as you can see, the delegate door is just to our left, and then the delegate entrance to the floor is just to our right. So we watch everybody go by.
And the nice thing about the door is it warms it up in here. Despite the air conditioning, it's nice and warm.
It feels like the Sahara over there and like the Arctic over here. It's nice. You can stay in the middle if you want it perfect, but
you can't find perfect in here. It started to rain in here yesterday, rain inside, because the hot front and the cold front met each other right under the air conditioning right here.
Lake effect.
Yeah,
we should ask Tom Skilling about this.
Yeah, we probably should. We will a little bit. All right, so now I saw you down on the floor, tonight. Big speeches. The president makes his speech. He closes out the evening. Tim Kaine. Let's talk about Tim Kaine here for a second. Tim Kaine is a guy who, vice presidents always, to me, vice presidential nominees, when they're coming in for the first time, they always sort of have that, oh, shucks, me? Really? Is it me? Did I really just do this? And I think in a lot of ways it's legitimate, because we're like, it was close. It could have not been me. So what do you know Tim Kaine?
I know him well.
All right, so what do you expect out of him?
He's solid. The word you hear over and over, solid. What does it mean in politics to be solid? Respected, man of principle. This man announced he was against the death penalty before he ran for governor of Virginia. Now, that's a pretty bold thing to do. He said it's a matter of principle, matter of conscience, and he won.
Yeah. And he's of the Catholic faith.
Catholic faith.
Yeah.
He's a Pope Francis Catholic, for those who are listening and paying close attention to how the team may be divided. He dropped out of Harvard Law School after a year and said, I need to do something more with my life. Went on a Jesuit mission, I believe it was to Honduras or El Salvador, I forgot which one, and taught some folks in villages basic trades his father had taught him.
Right.
Learned fluent
woodworking,
Spanish.
Right? Wasn't he? He came from a machine shop, and he knew how to woodwork and all that.
Yes, carpentry and that sort of thing. And he's just an enormously respected person in the Senate. There were many people mentioned who would have been good running mates. Don't get me wrong. But I thought Tim was perfect for Hillary Clinton. He'll be a great running mate.
Do you think that everyone in the party will be embracing him fully at some point? It feels like right now there's still a little bit of reluctance from the more progressive members.
Let me be honest. In our party, as in the other party, there are litmus test party members. And, I think Tim passed all the tests, but there are always suspects. Well, maybe since he's a Catholic, and though he votes pro-choice, he said he doesn't like abortion. What does that really mean? I can tell you. He believes in his heart of hearts that it's a matter of conscience for a woman, her doctor, her family to make this decision. He may feel morally, as many do, this is
not a good outcome for people.
He'd discourage it, but he is ready to protect legally this constitutionally accepted right of individuals to make this decision.
All right, so we move on from him, and it's got to be sort of a tight night, right, for him. He's stepping up onto the stage. Tens of millions of people will be watching.
It's a big night.
He's got I thought he was incredibly conversational and very at ease on Saturday.
Yes.
When he accepted in Miami. I thought that was a good performance, because he started to feel, but it's a smaller room. Now, I mean, you've been down here, you've seen what's going on here, you've spoken at these things before.
Yes, I mean.
It's a stadium.
It is. It is overwhelming. And I can tell by the speakers, those who are doing it for the first time, they don't let the microphone do its work. They try to shout through it, past it, beyond it. Uh-oh.
Because you feel the magnitude of the room.
Big mistake.
It is. Did you do it the first time?
Sure he did. You're so nervous, you look out and say, whoa.
But you know what you hear, though? We were walking the floor a little bit ago, and you hear people who are out there, and they're making their speeches like this time of day or a little earlier than this, and no one's really paying
attention. Nobody's paying too close.
And so the guy is like, and he makes a point like an applause line. Never write an applause line if you're on before prime time, right?
Yes.
So he writes an applause line, and he's like, is this thing on? Hello? he had to repeat the applause line.
That's my good stuff.
Right, exactly. Is your mom, like his mom was the only one up there going, oh, go ahead, son.
Great.
It was great. So, it's tough enough. All right,
it is tough.
The president tonight, what do you expect to hear? Is he going to go after Donald Trump, do you think?
I, you know, he has been oblique in his references to Trump.
Yeah, do you think he'll be more direct tonight, especially after what happened today?
I don't know. What Trump did today was an outrage. Any other candidate who did that in any political party would be absolutely dismissed as not understanding the basics of foreign policy and the basics when it comes to national security. But the ravings of Donald Trump, I think he was on for a solid hour fielding questions. I mean, he's in his glory when he can make up these answers that make no sense an hour later.
And we had Michael Steele on, who's a dear friend, the former head of the Republican National Committee, who was like, well, I don't think he was really extolling the Russians to go rehack us. This is if they have this, maybe they should give it up. That seems to be, for moderate Republicans who find themselves in a very tough bind here, yes. trying to find a way to
wiggle a little bit,
to stick this square peg in this round hole. But it's clear, to me, it's very clear what he was saying was, hey, Russia, if you're listening, go out and find those emails for us. And Vladimir Putin, I mean,
that comparison was below the belt.
Giving away, he talks about Vladimir Putin being a better leader than Barack Obama. Okay, no matter what your politics are, there are arguments about the leadership of this administration or Barack Obama. People can debate that all they want. But Vladimir Putin kills his political opponents in a horrifying way. He poisons them. How can a guy running for president in a major party take his side?
Well, I can tell you that Donald J. Trump has a bromance with Vladimir Putin. He's just fixated on him. You go to Chicago and go to a little section called Ukrainian Village.
Oh, yeah.
Go to that church on a Sunday afternoon and ask them what the people who were born in the Ukraine think of Vladimir Putin.
Oh, yeah.
And whether he is a great and strong leader. Come to my part of the world, the Lithuanian community, or the Polish community in Chicago, and listen to what Donald Trump is saying about NATO. Well, we may or may not stand by our NATO allies, depending on whether they reconciled all their expenses. Wait a minute. That is exactly what Putin is waiting to hear.
Well, and did you see the Estonian president of the three Baltic nations? Estonia is the smallest footprint. And that guy was, oh, no, we've already paid our bills. It was like he was the first guy in line to get up there and scream.
He was getting worried.
No, we've got it. And it tells you that if world leadership is already starting to respond to this, and I'm not sure, you know, there's a lot of questions about Hillary Clinton, a ton of them. I don't like what happened here with the, and I don't think anybody does, and certainly the Bernie Sanders people don't like what happened here with the DNC emails
the
and all of that.
Not at all.
And I mean, I mean, what does that say about the disarray within the Democratic Party?
Well, it was awful at the beginning of the week. Let me be very candid about it. Over the weekend, as Debbie Wasserman Schultz was stepping aside, she was going to leave at the end of the week, and I'll do my thing at the convention, and then decided, no, I'm not going to be appearing at the convention. So it was a rough period. And Bernie Sanders was basically saying to the rest of the world, I told you.
Yeah.
You know, the DNC.
Do you empathize with him on that,
Senator? I do, absolutely. The DNC was supposed to be neutral. So Democratic voters across America could pick a candidate. They weren't neutral. And the emails proved it. So Schultz was out.
Do you think people are surprised? Political professionals, and you don't have to answer for yourself, but in the main, do you think that people who do this professionally were surprised by that?
Well, I will tell you a little bit, because she was under pressure. Sanders was saying to her, you'd better stay neutral, and we have evidence you're not. Fair warning.
Yeah.
And it obviously continued to some extent. So, yes, it was time for action to be taken. Action was taken. She was gone. Donna Brazile stepped in. What an amazing, I don't know if you were around the floor, amazing response to her yesterday.
Yeah.
She is a party favorite and a very competent, talented person. So we feel good about where she's going to end up helping us down the line. So then we have the first day.
But that's temporary, though, isn't it? Or
it is. It's still the election. And then the first day in the invocation, when the mention is made of Hillary Clinton, the Bernie people start booing during the invocation. So we were off to a rough start on Monday.
We just got Game of Thrones. Right. We just got here from Cleveland, and I thought I saw a blank show.
There's no way.
Oh, my God. And then here on Monday, I'm like, oh, boy. It's the craziest year ever.
Let me give credit where it's due. Decisive action on the chair of the DNC. And then Bernie Sanders, my colleague, stepped up.
Yeah, that was magnanimous.
He publicly made statements, don't do this, and was very specific. And then when the roll call ended, and it was Bernie Sanders who said, that she be nominated by acclamation. I thought, you can't ask anything more.
This it was man, a class move.
It was a classy move, yeah. He's a classy person.
And that's what he turned out. I mean, you suspected that all along, and it turned out he was. He was dignified in defeat, and he's trying to appeal to his people to say, hey, we're going to go for Hillary Clinton. This is our candidate. It just feels as if you look at the protests, if you feel some of the momentum here, that they are not yet there. Do you feel that too? Is it going to happen?
I do, but keep in mind, some of the people who supported Bernie Sanders were not really Democrats. They represent leftists who would be in the Occupy movement or anti-TWO movement and sort of thing.
Outside the framework.
And Bernie was a good vehicle for them to express their political views, but they aren't signing up for the Democratic Party for the long haul.
I'm not sure. You might need them this year.
Well, I don't know. I hope we don't take any vote for granted, but historically, they have usually voted third and fourth party. Some of the Sanders people are disenchanted, but I think it's a very small percentage. Most I meet are for Hillary and follow Bernie's lead.
Should I be using the gender-neutral bathroom more than I am right now?
Have you used it?
You know, I went into it the first day when I came here. It's a common gender bathroom, I call it, over here.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, this brings back the name Phyllis Schlafly.
Oh, right.
Phyllis Schlafly.
She was in Cleveland.
Was she still alive?
She was there. Yeah. Get him, we saw
Phyllis.
Her.
She warned us 45, 50 years ago, if you vote for the Equal Rights Amendment, we'll be in the same bathroom. Well, we didn't get the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yes, but welcome you got to the Philadelphia. Bathroom. Yeah. Woohoo! I don't think Founding Fathers were thinking about that. I don't think, it took so long for them to get their pants off, right? Because all the buttons.
All the buttons.
Yeah. All right, Senator, thank you very much. Dick Durbin is
with
us.
Senator.
And we appreciate your time.